Thanks, Leon. I would like, first of all, to thank the organizers for this very nice conference. Back to frustration, and this is the politically correct title. Now, let me show you the real title, where, in fact, I will discuss a possible supersolid phase in one specific frustrated quantum magnet, namely strontium copper borate. This is how far we are in the field. So I think it's important these days to make a difference between politically correct and true information. So first of all, before I forget, let me thank all my collaborators that have contributed to several aspects of this work. Some of them are here in the room. And I would like to put really emphasis on collaboration with Takigawa from ISSP and Claude Dertier from Grenoble, with whom we are discussing on an almost everyday basis to try to understand the magnetization of these compounds. But let me, I will not start by a presentation of strontium copper borate, although chronologically we worried about supersolid phases in strontium copper borate before they became fashionable, I should say, a few years ago. But I will still pretend that we have been excited by supersolid phases, describe them, why we think we can realize this phase in quantum magnets, and then discuss the properties of strontium borate. So the supersolid phases have been discussed, of course, in the continuum in the context of helium-4, but this would take me too far, so I will jump directly on lattice models, typically Hubbard boson models that could be hardcore bosons with some repulsion between nearest neighbors, say, or softcore bosons, because although supersolid phases had been proposed in these models to exist a long time ago, it was only proved, I think, quite recently with quantum Monte Carlo simulation that such phases do appear in the triangular lattice. There are a series of papers that were published in 2005 showing strong evidence for a supersolid phase in the triangular lattice. So what is a supersolid phase? It is a phase where there is a spatial, there is a coexistence of solid order, which would be typical of an insulating phase of bosons, like here at 1/3 or 2/3 filling, where we would have a regular arrangement of bosons, say, charge density wave. And in between, this phase is, in fact, when bosons are added. Rather than destroying the solid to become a uniform superfluid, the particles prefer to jump on between the particles here on the lattice at the picture to form a state where we have both a superfluid rigidity and a solid order. Above and below these plateau, in fact, there is here, this is plotted as a function of density, so there is a phase separation. There is, in fact, a first order transition between the solid, say, and the superfluid. So that's a picture. Now I think this is really believable. It's not totally generic. Other models have been studied, and if we take the same model on the square lattice or on the Kagome lattice, for instance, there is no evidence of a supersolid. So well, that's one of the questions that is still pending in the field to try to understand exactly or to be able to be predictable, that is, whether or not a supersolid phase will show up. So that's quite interesting. It has been proposed mostly in the context of cold atoms, but quantum magnets might be another way to realize these phases, and this is what I will now discuss. So there are different ways a quantum magnet can be mapped on hardcore bosons. There is a simple way. Take the Heisenberg model, and you can write a hardcore boson model where the hopping term is just the xy part. The problem with that model, with this mapping, is that in the Heisenberg models, the coupling tends to be isotropic, so the repulsion will be of the same order as the kinetic energy, and this wouldn't be good. You see here in this phase diagram that the kinetic energy should be significantly reduced to get the supersolid phase. But there is another way where one gets rather naturally a hardcore boson model with a small kinetic energy. And this is a different logic. This starts from systems of coupled dimers. So I've written here the Heisenberg model for a simple dimer, a single dimer in a magnetic field. The ground state is a singlet in zero field, and the excited state are triplets. And when the system is put in a magnetic field, then the singlet, of course, is unaffected, but one of the triplets is coming down and is going to cross the singlet at a critical field Hc. At that particular point, the magnetization would raise. And if we now consider a collection of such objects, then the right way to think about what happens around the critical field if you consider that the triplet is a hardcore boson. It's impossible to put two of them, there is no statistics, so this object is really a hardcore boson. And at this particular point, if we start coupling such objects, we are dealing with logically a hardcore boson model on a certain lattice. And this hardcore, if some coupling is switched on, then the critical field is going to be enlarged because we have some kinetic energy. And then the magnetization as a function of a field, which would be represented here, going from zero to magnetization to federation, corresponds exactly to the curve of the density as a function of the chemical potential. In other words, we have putting this kind of object in a magnetic field, we have a very simple control of the chemical potential by just adjusting the magnetic field. And if we measure the magnetization, we are really measuring the density of this particle. Now, with respect to what I'm going to talk about later, there are two order parameters that are possible here. A modulation of SZ, Z being the direction of the magnetic field. This would correspond to a charge density wave in the context of bosons. And we can also have an ordering of the XY component of the spin. And the ordering would break the U1 symmetry of this XY model, and this would correspond to Bose-Einstein condensation. So we have, in principle, with these models, the possibility to have hardcore bosons and to describe different types of order. But OK, that's in principle. Now, if we want to get interesting phases, such as insulating phases and maybe supersolid phases, then we have to work on a number of issues. The first one is how to reduce the kinetic energy. I told you that the standard mapping isn't good because the kinetic energy would be as large as repulsion. Here, it is not given that the kinetic energy will be small, but if there is frustration in the inter-dimer coupling, then indeed the kinetic energy can be very small, reduced to almost zero within nearest neighbor. Another question, because the compound strontium copper borate effect essentially lives on a square lattice, another question is whether we can indeed create supersolid phases on a square geometry. And there are different ways to that. There is a way which is really motivated by the physics of the strontium copper borate, which consists in introducing some correlated hopping. Then we need also some general idea of what the experimental signature would be of a supersolid. And generically, we expect to find two phase transitions in that case, one corresponding to the development of solid order and the other one to the rigidity, a causally Thales-like transition in 2D. And finally, the experimental realization that I will discuss. So let me go briefly over these various points. First of all, why does frustration reduce the kinetic energy? This is really the key point here, if you wish, at the microscopic level. And it's really quite simple. Imagine having a triplet and a singlet nearby. If you have a single bond between them, then the amplitude for the triplet to hop is just given by 1/4 of the coupling J here. But if it can hop to both ends of the singlet, in fact, the amplitudes do not add, but they subtract because of quantum interferences. And that's quite clear, because if this object is a singlet, then we are coupling this spin to the total spin here, which is zero, and this vanishes. So the amplitude is exactly zero here. So as soon as we have some frustration in the interdimer coupling, represented by having several couplings starting from one side to the other end of the dimer, we can expect to have a very much reduced kinetic energy. At the same time, the repulsion, of course, is not affected, because the repulsion is just the diagonal SZ part. And in that case, if we have two couplings, they just add, so we have a strong repulsion. The kinetic energy and repulsion go in opposite way. And if we have a frustrated arrangement of coupled dimer, then we can really expect to have low kinetic energy and strong repulsion. And so we can expect metal insulated transitions in the language of bosons, which would correspond to magnetization plateaus. So the first point seems to be OK. We should have magnetization plateau that would show up at the magnetization as a function of the field of the plateau, which would be the equivalent of having a gap if we plot the density as a function of the chemical potential. This was predicted in different contexts by different authors. A precise calculation was done recently for a frustrated ladder with the density matrix renormalization group, and the picture fits quite well with the expectation, up to a magnetization jump here, which has to do with the fact that the excitation here from the polarized state involve S equals zero triplets and not singlets. But apart from that, we have a well-defined plateau here for a ladder where we have some frustration by having two types of coupling. And note that an interesting remark here has to do with what happens outside the plateau. We are in one dimension here, so the transition is continuous. There is no magnetization jump here away from the plateau, and the magnetization here is uniform in this phase. These are really Luttinger liquids, and the plateau has to do with the exponent reaching the appropriate value. But if we take a pure Heisenberg ladder, we have nothing like a supersolid in the system. We have a solid phase, and we have Luttinger liquid. It would take something else to create the equivalent of a supersolid, as we've shown actually recently, but I will not discuss this further. But if you had appropriate Dialoginsky-Moria interaction on the rank of the ladder, then it's possible again to break the translational symmetry outside the plateau. Second thing, can we have a supersolid on the square lattice? So the answer is yes, even for hardcore bosons, provided one had something to be Hamiltonian. And in the context of the strontium borate, we have this very frustrated geometry. So the hopping between dimers is impossible directly from one horizontal to one vertical dimer. This is what I was showing. But in fact, I will show the structure later. But one can still generate some kinetic energy, but it's a very high order perturbation. It is in sixth order of the nearest neighbor coupling. Whereas one produces a correlated hopping, whereby a particle can hop from one side to another side to second order in the inter-dimer coupling. So this kinetic energy is expected to be dominant as soon as we have strongly frustrated arrangements of dimers. And it turns out that this correlated hopping indeed produces a supersolid phase. Here is the phase diagram we have obtained as a function of correlated hopping. Zero means we have the regular system with only nearest neighbor hopping. And in that case, you see there is no supersolid. There is just a first order transition from a plateau to a superfluid phase. This is taken for a value of V, which is around 3 times T. And here we work in units where T plus T prime equals 1. But as soon as some correlated hopping is switched on, we still have a first order transition from the superfluid coming from below, but we have a large supersolid phase above. And the explanation is basically the same as the one given for the triangular lattice. Once we form the solid, if we add one particle, imagine having another particle here for a checkerboard, the extra particles will profit completely from the kinetic energy of the correlated hopping. So there is something generic in these models. They produce correlated hopping. This is natural. The correlated hopping produces naturally supersolid phases. So it sounds like we might be on the right track. Yes? No, this is, it is, yeah, we do. This is the V here. No, it is only between nearest neighbors, yes. That's correct. Yeah, we have a V between nearest neighbors, so this is going to produce a checkerboard type of order. And then we have the correlated hopping, sorry. Now, and one question that was asked to us actually by experimentalists, okay, if we have a supersolid, can we see it in the thermodynamic measurements? And in principle, the answer could be yes, but one has to be careful because in frustrated XY models, it is well known that often a single transition shows up, although you would believe you have an Ising type of order and a Kosaryk Tauless type of order rigidity. So we check that for a particular model, which is in fact a model where the kinetic energy has been reduced by taking an isotropic coupling for the Heisenberg model. And indeed, we have different phases. There is in that model a supersolid phase, as shown by Ng and Li in 2006. And we checked the temperature phase diagram of that model. And indeed, we found that between the solid phase and the superfluid, there is a supersolid. And if we heat the system from the zero temperature, we encounter two phase transitions. In that particular case, it seems difficult to have the Ising transition before the Kosaryk-Tauless transition. But in other models, like the model with correlated hopping, in fact, the two transitions can really occur in a different order. The Ising transition will occur first close to the superfluid model. So we should expect two phase transition if we have a real supersolid that breaks translational symmetry and the U1 symmetry of the XY model. Okay, now experiments. We have all the bases. Let me introduce the compound, strontium copper borate. It was synthesized in the 90s, but first studied, its magnetic properties were first systematically studied by Kageyama and collaborators in 99. The system is a layered copper oxide. Copper here are the red balls, and they are arranged in something that is called orthogonal dimers. Each dimer is rigorously orthogonal to its four neighbors, building a two-dimensional lattice. We have some super exchange here. We have strontium between the layers, and we have boron oxygen 3 units here that provide some super exchange not only along the copper, but between the copper side. And a number of measurements have more or less converged toward the following picture. The intra-dimer coupling is of the order of 85 Kelvin, and the ratio of the inter-dimer coupling to the intra-dimer coupling is about 0.66. So that's the basic of the system, and the interest was raised by the magnetization curve. I've shown here the original magnetization curve of Kageyama and collaborator. There are some improvements recently. And the magnetization is remarkable. The first thing that is striking is the number of plateaus in this system. It was measured up to 60 Tesla, more recently up to 70 Tesla, some claims up to 100 Tesla. But the structure of plateau that I think is well established is the following. There is a plateau at zero field. I'm sorry, there are two curves here for different field orientations. So, but just try to concentrate on the one curve. Say, for instance, H per to C. So we have a plateau at zero. The magnetization rate is only above a certain critical field. We have an anomaly, which is indeed a plateau at 1/8, at 1/4. This is 1/3, in fact, and this stays flat up to very large fields of the order of 100 Tesla. So that's really the first thing that attracted the attention, this plateau. These plateaus should break the translational symmetry, and this was actually checked by NMR at the 1/8 plateau. You have to consider, let me go back for a minute, the magnetization, we are talking about large fields here. You have to go to 28 Tesla to reach the first plateau. And this was done with pulsed magnetic field. This explains the number of irregularities. We believe, for instance, here there is a jump and a plateau. But to do NMR, of course, you have to go to steady fields. And this was done in Grenoble, 28 Tesla. That's already a rather big magnet. And the experiments had to be done at very low temperature. At 1 Kelvin, they observed nothing. They had to go to 35 mK to actually observe something. And what they observed is the following. They made NMR below the plateau and inside the plateau, which corresponded at that time to the maximal field they could reach. And the spectrum is the following. Below the plateau, this is the full NMR spectrum. It's a single copper site per layer. That is, there are several lines, but this is because copper has a spin 3 half nuclear spin, and also we have two isotopes. So we have, in principle, six lines for a single copper atom that have some overlap here. But the spectrum at 26 Tesla is very clean and very typical of a single copper. And if you go from 26 to 27.6 Tesla, this is the new spectrum. There is a considerable change in the spectrum, and to try to fit the spectrum, you need at least 11 different copper sites. So this is done piece by piece. Here, this is, for instance, one copper site. This is another copper site. Here, there is another copper site. And then you have a forest of peaks corresponding to several different copper sites. And the full interpretation is not clear, but this really proves that the system is breaking the translational symmetry. Now, why is the spectrum so complicated? At 1/8, if you break the translational symmetry, we expect to have one dimer, one triplet, every 8 dimers. So naively, you could expect to have one signal for the triplet and one big signal for all the other singlets. So this is not what's happening. And this is due to the fact that although we indeed have a triplet here represented in red, these triplets will strongly polarize the other singlets. In particular, imagine having this as a triplet for 1/8 unit cell. The site which is here feels, of course, the magnetic field, which would like to have him be red, that is, point in the right direction, in the field direction. But in fact, it feels an antiferromagnetic exchange from this strongly polarized spin, and this overcomes completely the field. So this is why the spectrum is actually much more complicated. We still have a standard breaking of the translational symmetry with the 1/8 with 8 dimers per unit cell, but the spectrum is complicated because of the strong polarizations of the remaining singlets. And I will not try to explain the full details of the spectrum, but one thing, the main feature that was surprising to experimentalists was the fact that we have, in particular, this side, which is polarized against the field. That would be the line of copper if we had no magnetic ordering. And in fact, we can explain the three main features here very simply on the basis of this model. This corresponds to the strongly polarized side. This to the blue side polarized against the field. This is the next side, which is also strongly polarized, but slightly less polarized than that one, and so on. So we have in that system, the frustration reduces the kinetic energy, and we have a number of plateaus, including a 1 over 8 plateau. There is a proof. There are also data, actually, on the 1/3 plateau that have been collected 3 years ago and still not published. People in that field are not in a hurry to publish their data, I should say. The data for the supersolid are also not published. So they like to understand the details of the NMR spectrum, which takes some time. So how were the plateaus, how were they understood? Well, on the basis of the orthogonal model, which is topologically equivalent to a model introduced by Shastri and Sutherland in 81, namely a square lattice with some second neighbor coupling. And this model was introduced by Shastri and Sutherland specifically for having one property, namely to ensure that the ground state is a simple product of singlets. If you have this geometry, imagine putting a singlet on every red bond of the lattice. This is always an eigenstate of the Heisenberg model. Why? Because all remaining couplings that are in blue here consist of coupling one spin to both ends of a singlet. But a singlet is a spin zero state, so this just gives zero. So all the other bonds drop, and this is always an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. And what Shastri and Sutherland proved analytically, variationally, is that this is going to be the ground state as long as J prime is not too large. So they had a variational bond bound on this ratio. Numerically, now it's believed that this is going to remain the ground state as long as J prime over J is smaller than about 0.7. In the system, as I said before, the ratio is supposed to be around 0.63. So we are in the phase where the ground state is a singlet. So if we have a singlet which is decoupled from everything else, we expect for the full system to have a singlet triplet gap, so that we'll have a we expect to have a gap and some magnetization plateau. Oh, very good. Thank you very much. You're aware of the fact that I was scheduled for only 30 minutes in total? Probably not. I should not have said that. Okay, let me continue my talk. So we should be finished all together in 10 minutes. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to talk for 10 more minutes. Yeah, no, that's thank you very much, Leon. I'm really grateful. So anyway, so if we have a singlet, ground state, I was expecting some warning before. That's why I was looking at the time. But anyway, so the model was cooked. The model was cooked up to have this property, to have a gap, and the gap is that's unfair. Well, let's make it 5 minutes. And so I think it's an interesting message there, because if you need a crazy model, you know, never give up. You know, because I think Shastri and Sutherland never imagined that a compound was going to be found with this structure. Now, the second thing is we have a small kinetic energy for the triplet, as I said. And so we have plateau. All these explanations were put forward by Miyahara and collaborators. I'm actually almost done. So the plateaus are okay. What happens between the plateaus? This is the next question. So far, in NMR, only the region below the 1 over 8 plateau had been measured, and it was a simple superfluid with no broken translational symmetry. So in fact, this is one of the two possibilities in two dimensions that are predicted by Landau theory. If we go away from the solid phase, since we have another order parameter in the superfluid phase, either we should have a first order transition, which is here represented by this phase separation in this diagram as a function of density, or we should have another phase with the coexistence of both order parameters, namely a supersolid. So we should have the two possibilities, and whether or not we can have a supersolid really depends on the transition we have upon entering the plateau. So now if we have a closer look at the magnetization curve of the strontium-copper borate, there is something striking and interesting. We have so far three plateaux that break the translational symmetry, 1 over 8, 1 quarter, 1 third. Below the plateau 1 over 8, there seems to be a jump, and this is completely confirmed by NMR. There is a jump from about half this value to the value at 1 over 8. Below the 1 quarter plateau and the 1 third plateau, also there seems to be jumps. And in particular, the 1 quarter plateau was missed by NMR, although the NMR was done in 1 third, because it's a very narrow region and there is nothing in between. So it seems that almost everywhere we have jumps, and the spectrum was confirmed by NMR to be uniform. But on the right side of the 1 over 8 plateau, there is no jump. This was not detected in pulsed magnetization in pulsed field. It was not detected in more recent experiments, magnetization, that are not published, that I cannot show. But this raises the question of whether we might have a broken translational symmetry above the 1 over 8 plateau. Because if we have no jump, according to Landau theory, then we have to have a coexistence of the two phases. And this is the case. So I don't have the data. This is all what Takigawa accepted to publish so far. A sketch of a phase diagram that was obtained both by NMR and by specific heat, where we have a 1 over 8 plateau with a strongly first order transition. But above the plateau, the translational symmetry is still broken. And this is very clear. To give you an idea, this is the boron spectrum. This was done at the boron site. This is the boron spectrum that you obtain at low temperature, where you are when you are inside the plateau. And if you go above the plateau, the spectrum still looks very much the same, up to small details that Takigawa and collaborators want to understand before they publish their data. So the translational symmetry is still fully broken. And this goes with the observation by Tsujui and collaborators in 2003, that there is a phase transition reported in specific heat. Enough, this paper is on CONMAT since 2003, was not published either. So really these guys are not in a hurry to publish their data. But there, this is a striking difference with the other side of the 1 over 8 plateau, where there is no phase transition at all reported in specific heat. So something happens here that probably has something to do with the super solid phase. So let me come now to my conclusions, which are open issues. Let me discuss what should be done. I mean, first of all, there is only one phase transition there. You observe a phase transition where there is a phase with a broken translational symmetry. There is no other phase transition that has been detected down to 35 mK. But this might have to do with the fact that we have the Alozhinsky-Moria interactions in the system. This we know from several other experiments. And these interactions are expected to break explicitly the rotational symmetry of the spin, and so they will prevent the system from having a true Coselli-Thales condition. And they might even help stabilizing some broken translational symmetry in ladders, as I said before. The magnetization profile above the 1 over 8 plateau, I wish I could tell you what it is, but we don't know yet. The interpretation is tricky because it's boron NMR. We need the hyperfine coupling, transverse hyperfine couplings, and so on, to go back to the magnetization. And this interpretation is underway. There seems to be further symmetry breaking with respect to the plateau. So there seems to be still some interesting physics going on there. At the theory level, I think it's important to understand that there is no quantitative theory of this transform cup over 8. It's a very tough model. We are talking about high commensurability in terms of hardcore bosons. This means that we are talking about effective repulsions coming between very distant neighbors. So typically, you have to do degenerate perturbation theory up to order 12 or something like that to get the right value of the coupling. Now, degenerate perturbation theory to 12th order generates of the order of 300,000 terms in the Hamiltonian. So it's a rather difficult task, something we have avoided to do so far. But it seems now that if we want to be predictive about the possibility of having a super solid phase above the 1 over 8 plateau, we have to go for it, and we are actually trying to do it now. Thank you for your attention.
Not that I needed the. So you've shown all these plateaus at 1 8th, 1 4th, and 1 3rd. There have been at conferences where more recently, there seem to be other data seeing plateaus at all kinds of other fractions. Okay. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I did not comment because it's we really don't understand what why there are such big differences between the data obtained in Grenoble by Takigawa and Berthier and the other data. In particular, so in Grenoble, but let me comment in detail. In Grenoble, they made so far experiments up to 32 Tesla. And below the 108 plateau, there is a big jump in magnetization, in torque, and in NMR, and nothing at 109. So for instance, in the data you're mentioning, they have some anomaly at 109. Mystery totally, really rigorously absent. And above the 108 plateau, there is the magnetization raises continuously in the experiments done in Grenoble. There is no evidence of other plateau. In the other experiment, magnetization raises very fast, actually much faster than here in pulse field. So there is something fishy somewhere, but there are not the data, and I think it's too early to worry about these extra plateaus until a number of experimental things have been checked. In particular, they're not measuring the magnetization, they are measuring the torque, but they put their sample at quite a big angle away from the principal axis of the G tensor, and we believe this might be the source of a very strange signal in the torque, which, if interpreted as magnetization, might be just giving some wrong results. So, but you know, that's it. They are discussing exchanging data. So, I decided not to mention these new experiments until it's clear what's happening.
One question. Yeah. Need to turn it on.
Something, I have a very naive question. So why are there plateaus in the first place? What is the physical explanation for it? Is it that there's some density wave that's locking in at different Q values, or why a plateau?
It's a real space picture. It's the simplest picture you can have. You have bosons that have repulsion, and they have long-range repulsion. If you push the effective model far enough, you will have repulsion at all distances. So if you had no kinetic energy, no hopping at all, you would have actually plateaus everywhere. The kinetic energy is removing some of these intermediate plateaus, but the most robust plateaus, given the set of interaction, resist the kinetic energy and stay as insulating phase of a bosonic model.
But okay, I would understand that there's no kinetic energy, but the kinetic energy would smear out everything. But apparently some plateaus are smeared out and other ones are not.
Well, if you imagine it, that's the case in all metal insulated transition. The kinetic energy, if it is small, you know, starts smearing small plateaus like in electronic models, but some plateaus at some commensurability will be stabilized as long as the kinetic energy is small enough. In 1D, you could even classify this according to the Lettinger liquid exponent that may or may not couple your Umklapp process of higher order. In 2D, we don't have such a tool, so it's more an observation, but that's the basic physical picture is the same, I believe.
Did they measure a specific heat with a magnetic field and then maybe follow a spin gap as a function of field? This plateau phase related to the Bose-Einstein condensation tension?
So you're talking about the specific heat detected a phase transition in the plateau, but this is the plateau because you have a phase transition upon breaking the translational symmetry. So now below the plateau, I don't think that in this paper, in this preprint, I don't think that they went to low enough temperature to actually detect the gap, which in the 1/8 plateau is presumably extremely small because the width of the plateau is just 1 tesla, so you expect the gap to be a fraction of a tesla. And the critical temperature of the plateau is around 600 milli K. Well, I think you would have to go to much lower temperatures. So I don't think they have observed a clear exponential behavior. But if your question is about whether we have a gap here, this is known from NMR. NMR was measured at low temperature, the relaxation rate. I did not discuss this at all. And the relaxation rate indeed decreases exponentially in the plateau phase. So there is a gap. In fact, the gap closes and opens again upon entering the plateau phase.
A question and a comment.
Okay.
So the the comment is just a, I like this observation, and I think that, in, there are many systems with magnetization plateaus, at least, and some of them certainly have broken translational symmetry.
Yes.
Well, and in any case that you find such a thing with a continuous transition off the plateau, provided spin orbit isn't too strong, you have a case for a supersolid.
Yes.
But probably outstanding example would be cadmium chromite. The spinel material has very well-developed broad plateau.
But they have strong first-order transitions, not even above.
Not above the plateau.
Not above the plateau.
Below the plateau is a strong first-order transition, but above the plateau, it's continuous.
Okay.
But so the question is, how well do you understand the Dyalshinsky-Maria interactions in this material? When you show the magnetization curves, they look quite a bit of anisotropy between the C-axis and AB plane. Go back to the curve?
Which one? The magnetization curve?
Yeah. So I might guess from this picture that there's some spin orbit, probably DM interaction that's predominantly along the C-axis, or is that?
The DM interaction, yes, on the between the bonds. So you have two couplings, and you have, in fact, two DM interactions, and we have different indications from different experiments that both of them are present. Let me go back to the structure of the system. So along the for the intra-dimer bond, we have a DM interaction lying in the plane. If this was actually a real plane, this would be forbidden by symmetry, but in fact there is some buckling, so it is possible. And this is quite big. This is on the order of 4% of the coupling constant, and this gives anomalies in the magnetization, in the fact that the magnetization does not start where it should. We are, from the gap, we have a critical field, but in fact, the system starts to develop magnetization much below. Then we have another, we have also, between these couplings, there is a DM interaction, and this one is pointing perpendicular to the plane along the C direction, and this was directly observed in neutron, in elastic neutron scattering experiment at zero field, where it is responsible for splittings at some zone, the high symmetry points. So we have all this, and we're not going to have a complete super solid if we have a super solid.
And on that, is that, do you believe that DM are responsible for the fact they don't have a really well-developed plateau?
Yes and no, because the plateau is well-developed if you look at other data. These are pulsed magnetic fields. So. In fact, it's quite interesting because these experiments were done at 1.6 Kelvin, and we know that the critical temperature of the plateau here is 600 millikelvin. So they should never have observed it. If they have observed it, it's because of some magnetocaloric effect, that the actual temperature of the sample is much smaller. But if you look at NMR or more precise magnetization data, there is a plateau. There might be a small slope with DM interaction. You would expect to have one, but the plateau is really well developed. So thanks for giving me.